Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
The simplest explanation is the most likely to be true. Is a dumbed-down version of the principle known as Occam's Razor, one that has been used in all sorts of disciplines for centuries. The person who coined the phrase was William of Occam, the subject of John Joe McFadden's book, Life is Simple, How Occam's Razor Set Science Free and Unlock the Universe, and he joins us now in News Talk. Good afternoon, John Joe.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, I suppose most people would understand Occam's Razor to be along the lines of the simplest explanation is the most likely to be true. Is that true? And is it provable to be true in most situations?
Well, it's a little bit more complicated. When William of Ockham first devised, if you like, his razor, it goes along the lines of entities should not be multiplied beyond necessity. Now, that second clause in the sentence is really important. So it doesn't mean that the simplest explanation is always right. Mm-hmm. But what it does mean is the simplest explanation that fits the facts is the most likely to be true. So, for example, we know there are 9 planets, not one, because we know that if we look out, we can see the planets out there. So it's, the simplest would be there was only a single planet, but we know that's untrue. We know there are many more. So the simplest that fits the facts is the is how the razor really works.
Yeah, so that doesn't necessarily mean that simplicity is always correct.
No, it doesn't. It means that if you have a number of different explanations for any phenomenon, say, I don't know, climate change, for example, pick the simplest one. Mm. And if that doesn't work, pick the next simplest. And if that doesn't work, the next simplest. So it means start off with the simplest explanation that you can think of. See if it works. If not, add something else. But don't add stuff you don't need to. And this was what was so revolutionary about the idea in the 13th century, because there were lots of superfluous stuff in the explanations of our universe at the time. And what William of Ockham did was, let's get rid of everything we don't need. And that really was the beginning of science.
Yeah. Now, but by doing that, because, you know, in many respects, not in all respects, but in many respects, the unnecessary stuff was trying to somehow keep God in the picture when you were describing a scientific phenomenon. And he kind of pointed out, perhaps deliberately or inadvertently, that you didn't really need the God bit.
Yeah, it was very deliberate. His aim was to separate science from religion. And what he said was that if you don't need angels, gods, demons, etc., in order to describe the universe, you can take them out and describe the universe without angels, demons, gods. He didn't say that you don't need to believe in angels, demons, and gods, but he said that the science that you try to make sense of the world with, you shouldn't use them. So he was a Franciscan friar. As far as we know, he remained devout throughout his life. But he was the first person to really say that, look, if you're doing science, get rid of everything superfluous, which includes the gods, includes the angels and demons. But if you are worshipping God, then you can have whatever you like. Angels and demons and anything you like can be in your worldview, but don't take them into your science. So he very clearly stated that there was a difference between science and religion. Science was based on reason and reason alone, whereas religion was based on faith. And you can find stuff in the Bible that you can't make any sense of, but as a Franciscan friar, he believes in them. So he was the first person to really separate science from religion. And that really is the beginning of the modern world to a certain extent, as all of science depends on that. That's how science works. You've got to get rid of the superfluous stuff. Otherwise, you're going to end up in an awful mess.
Given, though, that at the time, an awful lot of scientists and philosophers had a foot in both camps, taking that position, I assume, wasn't that popular, particularly with the church.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, William of Ockham, born in Surrey in the UK, he studied theology at Oxford. And theology was called at the time the Queen of Sciences, which seems very bizarre to us. But it wasn't bizarre in the 13th century, because Thomas Aquinas, for example, great Catholic theologian, had imported Aristotle's science into Christianity. So he provided, for example, using Aristotle's science, five proofs of God. And when William of Ockham came along about a generation later, he disproved all of Aristotle's proofs. And then that was one of the key arguments that he made, to say that science and religion are separate. And that really led to everything that we know and in science since then, that science has maintained that separation, despite the fact that the great scientists like Copernicus, Newton, Galileo were all devout men, but they kept their science and their religion separate. But yes, for William of Ockham at the time, it was a very controversial statement, and he ended up being accused of heresy. He had to travel to Avignon in France, where the Pope was residing. It was one of the French popes.
Yeah.
And then he ended up accusing the Pope of being a heretic and having to flee Avignon, chased by a posse of papal soldiers. So he had an interesting life.
Right. And where did he flee to when he was followed by the papal soldiers?
Well, he fled first to the port of Aigues-Mortes in the south of France. And there he found a ship provided for him and his fellow Franciscans by the Holy Roman Emperor. And he was then taken to Italy, where the Holy Roman Emperor was crowning his own pope in Rome. As you know, these were strange times in,
yes,
in the medieval world, where all sorts of things were going on. He then went to Munich with the Holy Roman Emperor and spent the rest of his days under the protection of the Holy Roman Emperor in or around Munich.
And so presumably the French Pope then excommunicated him.
He was excommunicated and they still pursued him. Apparently the papal soldiers threatened to burn down the town of Tournai, now in Belgium, in order for them to persuade them to release William of Ockham, who was there at the time, into their custody. Fortunately, they didn't release him, and they kept their gates closed. So he was pursued throughout Europe for the rest of his life, but he maintained, as far as we know, his freedom and died naturally.
And it is funny this, because people always say Ockham's razor, like that was his name. His actual name was William of Ockham. Why a razor, John Joe?
Yeah, it was the title Ockham's razor was not invented for several hundred years until about the 17th century, I think it was. And it was used to describe how William of Ockham is said to have kind of shaved off the complexity of medieval philosophy. Medieval philosophy was full of stuff, entities that were not really required to make sense of anything. And William of Ockham came along and shaved off all the excess. So that's why it's called a razor, because just as you shave off a beard that's not really required for you, you can shave off the complexity of an argument. And that's what Ockham's razor urges you to do.
And that continued to have an influence over centuries afterwards.
Absolutely. Even while William of Ockham was alive, he was very influential. About 50 years later in Florence, Florentine madrigal musicians were singing songs about him. So he was an influential guy at the time. In Paris, there was a school of Ockhamist philosophers, scientists, and one of them was called Jean Buridan. And he was the first person, as far as I know, to actually suggest that the Earth may be moving, may be spinning. And that accounts for why the sun and the moon and the stars rotate apparently around the Earth every day. Jean Buridan said, well, actually, you could keep all of them still by having the Earth spinning, and wouldn't that be simpler? So even during Ockham's lifetime, people were picking up his argument and using this argument that if it's an explanation is simpler, it's better to try to explain the universe. Copernicus took up that same argument, and the first step of his heliocentric solar system was, okay, let's have the Earth spinning in order to remove a lot of the motions in the heavens. And then he found an even simpler solution by putting the sun rather than the earth at the center. And his only argument was that for that heliocentric model of the solar system was that it was simpler. It didn't provide any more accurate predictions. It was just simpler. Mm-hmm. And then later, Kepler and Galileo also used simplicity arguments. Newton very famously said that you should make your laws as simple as possible. And every scientist since then, Einstein, admired simplicity and said, your laws should be simple, as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. The book is called Life is Simple, How Occam's Razor Set Science Free and Unlocked the Universe. The author is Professor John Joe McFadden. John Joe, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.